As Kathy Muzzy comes forward to light our chalice, I offer these words. We light this flame in honor of all that has come before, for the wisdom, joy, and tears that led us here. We light this flame to acknowledge the present moment, to greet our struggles and our successes with openness and courage, ever mindful that all we have is to be together right now. We light this flame as a symbol of our hopes, our commitment to growing ever more loving, ever more capable of bringing the peace we so cherish into the world. Amen.
Good morning. Church is about connections and transformation. So usually when I come back from vacation, I always mention a couple of stories of significant connections that I've made with other people. This morning's no different, or next week as well, or 2 weeks. This one is a little different, however, in that I made a connection with people I already know. So I drove, a week from tomorrow, I drove up to Flagstaff, Arizona, and met with Mackenzie and Jeremiah. So, for those of you who do not know Mackenzie and Jeremiah, they were a year ago youth who graduated from high school, or in May, graduated from high school and are now at Northern Arizona University in Flagstaff, Arizona. So it's really, really neat to see them in the context of their college life and to actually have dinner with them, have some time with them, and talk with them. The interesting thing is that Jeremiah had to leave dinner. Hi, Pearl. I love when the kids are here. Jeremiah had to leave dinner early because he had a university job. There is no way I could have figured out that this was his job. I figured, you know, mess hall, well, not the mess hall, but, you know, the maybe it is, I don't know, or whatever, but he, I believe he's actually 19 right now, is driving a full-length university bus around campus from one end to the other. This is Jeremiah. Now, I knew he liked cars. I know he likes trucks. He himself has a truck. I think it's his second or third one. What I never realized is that he might like something larger. So Mackenzie and I, Mackenzie was going to take me to her dorm after Jeremiah left, take me to her dorm to see the dorm and meet her roommate. Well, as we got to the student parking lot, yes, I parked in the student parking lot, Mackenzie realized that the bus that was at the parking lot was the one that Jeremiah was driving. So we ran to the bus, got our seats. We didn't need to run because he was sitting there for 15 minutes, but we did it anyway because we thought he was leaving. And so we sat there, and it just was amazing to me to watch this young man driving this humongous, gargantuan bus. And I knew as we went around campus that he would goof up, right? I mean, there's no way you can turn around on some of these curbs and not do it. But he was very professional the whole way. He had to be. It was his last training session, so his supervisor was there. I have to admit, too, that when I got on the bus and looked around me, I felt very, very old. I used to teach students this age. Now it's quite different. So Jeremiah was, you know, he had to make all these turns and everything. He did marvelously well. Unbelievable. I was so impressed with him. When he had a disabled student come on, he made sure everything was secure, that the wheelchair would not move, and so on, and made the person feel comfortable. So again, it was very, very impressive. We left Jeremiah. Mackenzie took me to the dorm, and so she took me on a tour of that, and it was wonderful because I got a tour of a university, NAU, that I actually had taught at a couple of summers in the 80s. What was amazing to me is I didn't recognize anything. So in that time, a lot has changed. So Mackenzie and Jeremiah were great showing me around. I realized when I said goodbye to both of them, to Mackenzie at the that evening, how much I miss them. And I realized how much I miss our youth, our kids. Me now? Is that better? Okay. Good morning. Hi, everybody. It's great to see you. So, one of the things, I don't know if you remember in like last year or even the year before, usually when I come back from winter vacation, I bring something for you. Do you know what it is? Yeah, rocks. Of course, there are rocks. We have to have rocks. So, but let me change the subject for a moment also. Does anybody know what retirement means? Really?
Yeah.
Cool.
It's when somebody's been working at work for a while and then they're so old they just want to.
Yes! Now I know why I'm retiring. Okay, thank you. That is right on. The old part I might... anyway... Precious. This is good. Yes, retirement is leaving, often anyway. Retirement is leaving your career or the work that you've been doing for a long time. So this past week, I sent a letter out to your parents saying that I will be retiring this year and that I have about 4 months left, okay? So what that means, too, is that I'm going to do the rocks a little differently this time, this year, okay? So I'm going to show you what the rocks are. These are stones. This is what's known as Montana agate, okay? So this is Montana agate. So it's like a geode almost, right? And you can find them in rivers and around the water. You can see how smooth some of this is because of the river. And so I met this woman last year, actually, who canoes on the Yellowstone River, and she picks up these beautiful, beautiful Montana agates that people love throughout the entire world, and she cuts them and polishes them. So one of the stones I brought back in here is Montana agate, and sometimes they're translucent, so they're not transparent. You can't see clearly through it, but they're translucent so you can see light through it. And then there's stuff inside, okay? There's another mineral in here. So agate is basically a kind of quartz, but there's stuff in here, and it's just really kind of neat. So that's one of the stones that I will be giving you, but I'm going to tell you when in a minute. The other one, so here's the larger piece, okay? These came from a piece like this, not this particular piece. You will eventually, but I'm going to tell you how and why. Here is a large piece of Amazonite. Do you have any idea where the term Amazonite might come from? I'm going to ask someone else for a minute first, if someone else knows. The Amazon River, yeah, that's right. And so this is a type of feldspar, okay? If you have a piece of granite, you have both quartz and feldspar in the granite, okay? There are three minerals in there. So here's your quartz, here's your feldspar. Now, it's not necessarily going to look like that, but this is a piece of feldspar. So this is Amazonite. Now, Wonder Woman. Yes, absolutely. And from what group does she come?
The Amazonians.
The Amazons, yeah. There's a group of women who are kind of goddesses-like, actually, and they are Amazons. Now, this has nothing to do with any of this, okay? I just thought I'd bring it up, because it's the same word, you know? Anyway, it'll help you remember Amazonite. Amazonite. So here are cut and polished pieces of Amazonite. I wanted to bring these back because it's, again, my favorite color also. So this I've had for a few years, actually. I picked this up long time ago, but these were from this year, and these, again, will be for you. But this is what we're going to do, okay? I am going to put these stones up on the second shelf of this table, all right, for the next 4 months, all right? My last service here is June 17th. Anybody know what day that is, what we celebrate? Do you? No. It could have been, but no.
July
4th, yeah. That happens to be Father's Day also. Happens to be Father's Day. Yeah, nobody remembers Father's Day. Anyway, so June 17th is my last service. This is when I'm going to give you the stones, okay? Meanwhile, I'm going to put these up there, both stones up there on the second shelf. And what I would like you and the congregation to do is to put lots of love, excuse me, I will put, this is mine, I will put lots of love into this and lots of energy and lots of hope and lots of caring into these stones because I want you to take a little piece of me back with you, okay? Now, for those of you who have read Harry Potter, it's a Horcrux, only it's a positive one. It's a nice one where you put part of yourself into something. Or the force, or love, whatever you want to call it. You put your spirit into something, okay? So I'm going to put my spirit into this every single time I come to church, all right? So that, again, on that last day, you have these. Meanwhile, these are the two I'm taking home, okay? Sorry, I don't have enough of these to pass around. These are the only two I have. So I'm taking these home, and I would like you, every time you're here, every Sunday that you're here, I would like you to put lots of love, and lots of caring, and lots of hope, and lots of energy, and the congregation too, so I can take you home with me. Okay? Does that sound okay? All right. So, it doesn't seem quite fair, however, that I shouldn't give you anything this morning. You know, it just doesn't seem right. But that's too bad. No, So what I'm going to do, though, is give you a rock pouch. A pouch where you can keep rocks that you've collected, that people have given you, or that you'll continue to collect. And I would like you, if you can remember, I'm going to see how many people can remember this. Remember to bring this back to you on June 17th. You think you can? 4 months away. All right, that's a long time for some people. Right. For some of us, not so much. So I'm going to pass these around. So take one of these. Yeah, you could bring it every time. Yeah, you could put it in your pocket of your coat or whatever it is. So take one. If you if your sibling or friend isn't here and you need an extra one, there are plenty. Okay. So thank you. So remember, we're going to pour in love and energy and care into these stones. Okay. All right. And I will be doing the same every single day for 4 months, all right? It is good to see you, but we're going to sing you now down.
To worship is to stand in awe under a heaven of stars, before a flower, a leaf in sunlight, or a grain of sand.
To worship is to be silent, receptive, before a tree astir with the wind or the passing shadow of a cloud.
To worship is to work with dedication and with skill. It is to pause from work and listen to a strain of music.
To worship is to sing with the singing beauty of the earth. It is to listen through a storm to the still small voice within.
Worship is a loneliness seeking communion. It is a thirsty land crying out for rain.
Worship is a kindred fire within our hearts. It moves through deeds of kindness and through acts of love.
Worship is the mystery within us, reaching out to the mystery beyond.
It is an inarticulate silence yearning to speak. It is the window of the moment open to the sky of the eternal.
At Seasoned Souls this week, we read this quote from John Steinbeck. It's a strange thing that most of the feeling we call religious is really the understanding and the attempt to say that people are related to the whole thing, related inextricably to all reality, known and unknowable. It is advisable to look from the tide pool to the stars, and back to the tide pool again. Ralph Waldo Emerson, the 19th century Unitarian minister and transcendentalist, wrote his essay, The Oversoul, in 1841, where he notes that the only profit of that which must be, that great nature in which we rest, is that unity, that oversoul within which every person's particular being is contained and made one with all other, and which evermore tends to pass into our thought and hand and become wisdom and virtue and power and beauty. He continues with this assertion of this pure nature. Every person is at some time sensible. Language cannot paint it with colors. It is too subtle. It is too undefinable, unmeasurable. But we know that it pervades and contains us. We know that all spiritual being is in humankind. Like the rational mystic that he is, Emerson claims the divinity of humankind. Ineffable is the union of humanity and God in every act of the soul, he says. Any person who in their integrity worships God becomes God. Yet forever and ever, the influx of this better and universal self is new and unsearchable. It inspires awe and astonishment. When we have broken our God of tradition and ceased from our God of rhetoric, then may God fire the heart with his presence. Jacob Trapp, in the reading Amy and I just did, defines worship as the mystery within us, reaching out to the mystery beyond. We talk about the divine and the mystery within us in a variety of ways, but the frustrating part, of course, is that it forever remains inexplicable and ineffable. So we use art and music and poetry and dance and myth and metaphor and stories to help us express the great paradox of life, that we live our wondrous lives in the full awareness that we know so little about life. We are always, always living in a mystery because we are ourselves holy mystery. Khalil Gibran, the Lebanese poet and author, wrote this story. In the shadow of the temple, my friend and I saw a blind woman sitting alone. And my friend said, "Behold, the wisest woman of our land." Then I left my friend and approached the blind woman and greeted her, and we conversed. After a while, I said, "Forgive my question, but since when hast thou been blind?" "From my birth," she answered. Said I, "And what path of wisdom followest thou?" Said she, "I am an astronomer." Then she placed her hand upon a chest, saying, "I watch all these suns and stars and moon." And so the mystery within reaches out to the mystery beyond. Gibran also wrote the following story. Said one man to another, "At the high tide of the sea long ago, with a point of my staff, I wrote a line upon the sand, and the people still pause to read it, and they are careful that naught shall cease it, erase it." And the other man said, "I too wrote a line upon the sand, but it was at low tide, and the waves of the vast sea washed it away. But tell me, what did you write?" And the first man answered and said, "I wrote this, 'I am he who is.'" "But what did you write?" And the other man said, "This I wrote, 'I am but a drop of this great ocean.'" And so we have our paradox. I don't know if this was Gibran's intention, but the first writing, "I am he who is essentially the same as Yahweh's or God's self-identification in the Hebrew Bible. I am who I am, or I become who I become. It transcends the mundane and exemplifies the mystery. The second writing in the sand, "I am but a drop of this great ocean," expresses humility and the reality of our nature as mortal creatures. It is this second part, our mortality, that I wish to discuss for a few moments. You know, it used to be that sex and death were the two taboo subjects in our culture. And while that might not be so today, they are certainly not dealt with adequately or substantively in our society. And I have to say, I can never recall hearing a sermon on human sexuality. I have on death, but only at funeral services. Along with wonder and awe, the holy and the divine, compassion and beauty, all of which are elements of the mystery within, is death and our own dying. We actually have had a great deal of experience with death and dying when we consider that every day there are moments of having to let go, where change occurs, or perhaps where pain, sadness, or loss has crept into our hearts once again. Most of you received a letter this week from me announcing my retirement. I will admit that initially the idea of retiring was rather exciting, as I thought of having more time with Sue and family and friends, and of traveling and going on pilgrimage, of reading all those books you have suggested, and listening to all the operas on vinyl that I have, none of which I have been able to do. But all of these things are exciting to me. Oh yes, and working with rocks. What I didn't anticipate was the tidal wave of grief that overwhelmed me a few months ago, and the current of sadness that continues. It hit me that my work that I have felt called to and so enjoyed, at least in this form, would soon be over. It is a natural transition in life, but not necessarily an easy one. Hindu society is very clear about this stage of life, calling this lore of spiritual adventure the stage of the forest dweller. Every person deserves this time, says India, since society's pressures thus far has allowed very little time to read, to think, to ponder life's meaning without interruption. The time has come to begin one's true adult education, to discover who one is and what life is about. Why are we born to work and struggle, each with a portion of happiness and sorrow, only to die too soon? Generation after generation swells briefly like a wave, then breaks on the shore, subsiding into the anonymous fellowship of death. To find meaning in the mystery of existence is life's final and fascinating challenge. And so it is that not to the tasks and worries of this life already gone, which came and passed like a dream, that the mind is turned. It is the time for the forest dweller, the pilgrim, to work out a philosophy of life, a time of both self-transcendence and dwelling with that reality and beauty that underlies the natural world. It is, in short, a time to accept death as an integral part of the mystery within. Our society tends to deny the reality of death or finds immortality ideologies like the concept of heaven to mitigate the seeming horror of death. Our culture is also pretty callous about death, in spite of its protestations, as seen, for example, by the fact that we still have the death penalty, the way we wage war after war on other people's. We kill our own people in the streets or at schools. We do virtually nothing about gun control, and we do not have free universal health care. I have struggled all my life with my mortality. First, I believed in a presumably benevolent God that would assure me of going to heaven if I were a good boy. Then I intellectualized death by becoming an agnostic existentialist. I don't know if that's an oxymoron. Thinking that the absurd truly did rule the universe in its perverse way. Meanwhile, I, like Dylan Thomas, could rage against the dying of the light. But this is no longer where I am or want to be. I want to experience the mystery within as fully as humanly possible, and that in part means letting go and accepting death. So believe it or not, these are the kinds of things I think of when I contemplate my retirement. But the most painful one at the moment is here and now with you. I've said before that one of the most difficult things a minister does is to learn to love his congregation and then far too soon leave. But that was said in the past about some distant future far, far away. Nevertheless, here it is, and it breaks my heart. I'm not saying this for any kind of sympathy, consolation, anything. But I need you to know how much I have loved you, both as individuals and as a beloved community. Right now, I can't even imagine what it will be like not to see your faces, or joke around with you, or sing in the choir, or attend innumerable committee meetings. I can't imagine not seeing your children and hearing their voices and laughter and crying, or not ever returning to safe passage in Guatemala with the youth as we learn more about privilege and racism and loving people unconditionally. And yet I am convinced that part of the mystery within that reaches the mystery beyond has to do with our pain and sorrow, because it shows how capable of love we are. The more vulnerable we are, the closer to the mystery within we are. I have another 4 months with you, so let's celebrate and be grateful for what we have experienced together. I want to start now by singing our next hymn, which I chose purposely to tell you that I love you and that I honor the mystery of beauty that is within you. Blessed be.